your sports station.
BBC Radio Lancashire.
Brett Ormerod is here to talk to us about calling time on his playing days at the age of 39. He scored in all four divisions of the league for the Seasiders. He's earned Stanley a fine payday. He wasn't far off helping North End to the top flight. And he ends his playing days with Bamber Bridge. He's idolised by Seasiders fans after 250 games for Blackpool. In two spells, two playoff final goals to boot. He's overcome some pretty serious injuries over the years to take his career over 20 years. And I get the feeling he's no regrets at all about any of it. Delighted to say, joining us in the studio tonight, the end of an era, really, it's Brett Ormerod. Delighted to say that Brett is here, 6 minutes past six. The retirement was announced, what, 6 days ago now? Are you getting used to it, being called former footballer now?
Yeah, well, I've been called old for the last five, six, 7 years, so... Yeah, it's a strange feeling, but to be honest, I've been really overwhelmed with the messages of support and things like that on my Twitter and my Facebook. It's been overwhelming, really.
I found it on my way back from Blackburn's training ground last week. I saw the news that you'd decided to finish. And literally, before I had the chance to say congratulations, pal, on a great career, you're finding yourself trawling down through about... must have been hundreds of messages, the majority from your mates, and it has to be said from Blackpool fans who had this incredible relationship with you over the two spells, Brett. I mean, when you look back over your career, I just said there at the top of the programme, I very much doubt there's much that you regret in the game. How lucky do you consider yourself to have been over the last 20 years to have done what you've done?
Extremely lucky. You've got to work hard and things like that, but you always need a bit of luck and... like I say, I've had some pretty bad injuries as well and at times didn't think I'd get back from them. So, if you'd have told me when I left school at 16 and became an apprentice at Blackburn Rovers that the career I'd have, I'd have thought you were lying. But I'd snap your hand off, to be honest. And, 20-odd years later, I'm sat talking to you about it. So it's been a dream, really.
I would imagine over the 20 years, football has changed massively in terms of walking into work every day, in terms of the dressing room, in terms of the diet, in terms of managers and the way they talk to the players. You must have seen really the end of one era and the start of what really is modern day football.
Yeah, I mean, it's when I was 16 and doing the jobs and having to put the team for the first team players at Blackburn with Alan Shearers and Tim Sherwoods and people like that. You wanted to be not seen, not heard. You're just sneaking in and out. By the time I left, young lads wouldn't, come in and not really bother about things like that, And like Christmas, getting up and making you sing used to be the worst thing any young lad would think. Now you can't get them off because, they've all grown up with the X Factor and things like that, and The Voice, so they do requests and everything, you can't get them down. So, yeah, just the attitudes and the way the games improve with diet and sports fitness and prozone analysis, and it's just changed so much.
What sort of era were you most comfortable in? The era that you started in or the era that you're finishing in?
None, really. I always felt a fish out of water in both, really. Just a little scruffy lad who just got on with it, I think. I always tried to have fun. It wasn't, I've had a great career, but it has had its ups and downs. There has been times when, like, I think anyone doing anything, you have some bad times and some low times. But I always tried to take each day as it came and be positive and try and start again. If I had a bad game or whatever, just get it out of my head and try and move on. So, I never really felt 100% comfortable being a footballer or being tagged one. Never really got used to people asking for my autograph. It still feels strange now. It's just weird, but it's nice. Weird.
It's been great reading, certainly the messages from some of your best mates in the game. I've got one here from Facebook. It's brilliant. Danny Coyd, earlier this week or last week, says, Brett Ormerod has finally hung up his horrible, crusty Umbro specials. One of my longest-serving football friends, and long may it continue. From watching him in the stands as a young YTS to playing with him and making him look good and getting him a move to Southampton. So much love and respect for this old man as a footballer and as a person. The fourth best player after me, Stanley Matthews and Jimmy Armfield. That's a brilliant, brilliant message from Danny Coyd.
I'm flattered that he's put me a fourth, to be honest. I thought it might have been 14 for something like that. But he's a good lad, he's Coyd. He's, you know, he lost his ear pretty early on, so I've every sympathy.
A lot of people getting in touch. Dexter is one who's got in touch. He says, what was the best feeling in terms of your career? Was it your first game for Stanley, your playoff goals, or playing in an FA Cup final?
I'd have to say it's a mix, because playing in an FA Cup final with Southampton in 2003, that was, you know, my boyhood dream as a kid, kicking a ball around. You know, I remember playing with my mates in the street when Everton were playing Watford in 84, I think it were, United, Everton in 85, you know, Liverpool, Everton in 86, I think it were, and Coventry, you know.
Hey, you're not bad at your trivia, are you, by
the
way?
When I was a kid, you know, I used to collect Sabutio and all that, and it was all about the FA Cup final. You know, that was it was a massive day then, and everyone dreamed of playing in that. So to play in that was an absolute dream, but we didn't win it. So plus it wasn't at Wembley. You know, the Millennium Stadium's a fantastic stadium, but it's not Wembley. And to go back, you know, I'd still say that winning promotion in 2010 with Blackpool was probably the best moment of my career, not only because of the occasion and everything, is because I actually got a chance to play at Wembley, which I thought I'd missed.
And that save by David Seaman in the cup final. You won't see many better cup final saves than that, will you?
It's probably one of the best strikes with my left foot I've ever done. I remember just chesting it and then turning and hitting on the volley, and nine times out of ten I probably had cleared the stadium with it, but I hit it sweet, and honestly, in my head, I thought it's in, and he just, this massive hand come from nowhere, and he gave me a cheeky wink after, and it was no consolation. It was like we were taking a corner. I just stared at him as if, I won't say what I thought, but
please,
I thought,
don't.
It was just one of them days. We got beat 1-0, but the all occasion, and it was the first FA Cup final to be under indoors, because they just shut the roof, and you know, it was incredible atmosphere. But like I say, it was. Couldn't touch that trophy at the end, which, you know, was a bit of pill to swallow.
A lot of Accrington Stanley affection for you, Brett. Darren says it all about Brett. Took time out to help find photos for my official book on the club while he was still a Premier League player. And another one here from a Stanley fan who says he saw you score two hat-tricks for Stanley, both against Barrow in the same season, and you lost both matches.
Yeah, I remember it. They were both away at Barrow as well. I think we played, it was in the same week, I think. I think we played on a Tuesday night, and I think we went 3-1 up. I'd scored three and we got beat 4-3. And then we played them on the Saturday. I think that was in a cup, and then we played them on the Saturday in the league, and I think we got beat 5-4, and I'd scored three again, and coming away six goals, two games. And Barrow was one of the top teams then in the league then, you know, up near the top, and managed to score six goals and not get a point or a win. So it was a bit unusual.
our good friend Jamie Hoyland has been in touch with a message for you. He says, absolute marvellous pro, appreciated every minute of being a footballer. He can now pursue his career as a Bez lookalike.
Yeah, cheers, Jamie.
Jamie getting in touch. He'll be back Saturday afternoon with his show, Marvellous People. You want to give that a listen, Brett, now you're not playing on Saturday afternoons. Jamie Hoyland meeting various footballers, and I'm sure he'll be coming round to your house to do a piece with you, Brett, if you let him through the door.
Yeah. I'm not telling him where I live.
81333, if you want to send us a text tonight, send it, start it with the word Lanx. It'll be charged at your standard rate at BBC Lanx Sport. There's plenty more questions for Brett Ormerod as we go along this evening. 250 appearances in Blackpool colours. So much to talk about Blackpool. But as you mentioned a few minutes ago, started at Blackburn Rovers. And what was that like to have those players who you mentioned, the Alan Shearers, the Tim Sherwoods, to perhaps scrub the boots for?
I actually cleaned Alan Shearer's boots. I had Alan Shearer and Nicky Marker for 2 years, and obviously leaving Northern High School and all my mates, Blackburn fans and everything, and then going into pre-season. And I remember the first day we had a rota of your name and whose boots you were cleaning, and I said Nicky Marker, and then I said Alan Shearer. And I was just thinking, oh no, because I can't clean boots that well. I'm going to have to take them home, see if my dad will do them for me. But you know, we had a bit of stick off him that in the 2 years and not doing his boots very well. But you know, I remember once having to Jiff or Civ nowadays, his Umbro signs, because he just signed a new deal, and you know, they were dirty and things like that. So but he was always brilliant with me, and he used to play a game at Christmas where he'd have three cups, and I think we're on £30 a week then, and you'd have one with a pound in, one with £50 in, and one with £80 or £90 in. And for your Christmas tip, and first year I picked a quid. So Nicky Marker, you know, nicely, you know, said to me, don't worry, but I'll double it. For, which was nice of him. But no, he didn't give me a quid. He gave me about 40 or 50 quid. And then season after, I picked the top one, which I think the week before he weren't happy with his boots, so he was gutted. But no, he was brilliant, you know. You know, David Batty's and, like I said, the Tim Sherds. And the year I left 95 was the year that, you know, they won the Premiership. And it was just a surreal time to be at Blackburn, you know. Unbelievable time as a fan and everything else. And like I said, I played in Matt Letizia's testimonial a few years later at Southampton when I first went the first year, and still seeing Alan Shearer there, and he played in the game, and me and Beats was in the jumping jacks after and just looking at him and saying, he's still the man, like, isn't he? Me and Beats just talking to him, we're going, he's just Alan Shearer, and he's just, and you know, never felt comfortable talking to him because he's just, it's Alan Shearer. So it was, it was a fantastic time.
Do you look back at Rovers at all and think, if I'd have stayed, could I have made it in that first team?
Well, I don't know. I think, to be honest, if anyone remembers me in 16, I was very small, very light, and I'd had a double hernia operation that year, this in my second year apprenticeship, and fractured my shoulder blade. And I don't think mentally I was ready, to be honest. I think sometimes it takes, you know, it took me a bit long to settle down and being comfortable in that environment. It just didn't happen for me at that time. And by the time I'd scored a few goals in the A team, and I think I played a couple of reserve games, but I wasn't really, probably, you know, if I'm honest with myself, in that position to be challenging. You know, they had such a strong squad, even with Shearer and Sutton, and you look in, you know, the reserve, you had Paul Warres, Kevin Gallagher, Mike Newell, you know, Peter Thorne, players like that, and then, you know, with James Beattie and players like that, a year younger than me and stuff. So, you know, I think you'd to more or less be pretty much on the verge of the first team, pushing reserve to. And I think my year was one of the last years before they started really giving apprenticeships and pro contracts out. So if you weren't really like a Wayne Rooney at 16, ready to thingy, then it just wasn't there for you. And, you know, I found myself leaving, which was heartbreaking at the time. But, you know, it took me to Aki Stanley, where, you know, I had a fantastic time.
You went into the real world as well, didn't you? You had to go to work.
Yeah, it was part-time. I mean, to be honest, if I'm totally honest, I lost my confidence. I'd had a double hernia, and when I left Blackburn, I got my double hernia done, so I was pretty much on crutches, and I had staples everywhere, and I couldn't cough, talk, walk, or anything else. It was one of them. I was pretty depressed, and a friend of my dad asked a bloke called Steve O'Brien, said, you know, mind seeing if you can get him down at Stanley, and I went there, and, you know, players like Mark Rostrum, Chris Grimshaw, Les Thompson, and Brian Welsh, and players like that who I started playing with, and really just give me a lot of confidence. You know, Brian Welsh used to say to me every day, I remember playing against him when he was at Burnley, and just saying, you're a good player, and just putting that in my head. And I was just thinking, well, these players, you know, Les Thompson's played at Burnley now, they think I'm a good player, I might be, you know. And it basically just got my confidence back and started playing the way I knew I could do, and it just snowballed from there, really.
Suppose when you're busy playing and scoring goals, you never hear yourself being announced scoring goals on the radio, do you? How does that sound?
Terrible. And how many times I said, you know, that's all I said.
Well, don't say the commentary's terrible, because he's on the phone now. Ian Chisnell, good evening.
How are you doing, fellas?
I bet those goals bring back some fine memories for you as well, don't they?
And some of the most that I've been taking the mickey out of for as well, yeah. But, I mean, the man in there with you has given me some of my finest moments behind the microphone, as you might have gathered from those little clips.
They're two playoff finals, Chiz. Just talk to us about the first one, the Leighton Orient one first.
Oh, that was one of the worst days of my life. I was in Corfu or Greece or somewhere, Rhodes, I think. Rhodes, that's right. Trying to find a telly to watch it on. And it was on the same day as the Scottish Cup final, Celtic Rangers. And, of course, every TV in the resort was showing the Scottish game and not ours, until I found a little pokey one that had two screens. And my Greek's not very good, but the barman persuaded me, if you're here at 5 o'clock their time, 3 o'clock kick-off time at home, it will be on. Sure enough, I rocked up there at 3:15, got myself a nice big cold beer, sat there and watched Phil Barnes slip in the first minute, and I said to the barman, can you rewind that? It's not happening. But thankfully, it all turned out well in the end.
I take it you had no great confidence that Blackpool would make the playoffs that year, booking a holiday.
I don't know whether it's my wife's fault. I think I better put the blame down to her, but ever since the second leg up at Hartlepool, I spent about 10 days trying to rearrange it and do things like that, but it wasn't going to happen. We had to be there. But, yeah, talking about that second leg up at Hartlepool, there's a story to that, and I'm sure Brett remembers. I'd go into the ground unusually early. Hartlepool were behind anyway, and they had a load of injuries, and they wanted it off, and it absolutely pelted it down. And I ran the gaffer at the hotel. I said, you better get down here quick because they're going to put this game off. So I think the gaffer got a taxi from the hotel, arrived, and was in the referee's ear for so long that he said, OK, we'll go with it. And I think you might have notched that night, pal, didn't you?
Yeah, I managed two, I think, I got that night. It was a great night, to be honest, but...
He remembers all of them, I think, Chiz. I think he has a memory that tells him that he scored in every game. You just want to be in his company. You'll know for that. In terms of the next playoff final, which I think Blackpool supporters, so many of them, barring the Premier League matches themselves, will never, ever forget that day at Wembley, will they?
No, and it was just so appropriate that the man himself was the man to get the winner. As he said in his interview there, between the you-knows, was written in the stars. He had to get it. And he had no right to get there when you look at the replay again. I think it was your best ever toe-ender from about 6 yards, but the most priceless one ever. And, it'll live long in the memory. It was fantastic then.
I think, Brett, when you said at the time, and I think I've read since, that you felt it's only in years to come that you lads will think about what you achieved that season. And I know you all got together at the end of last season, didn't you? And you raised an awful lot of money for Gary Parkinson on the night as well. Is it only when you get back together now do you actually think, blimey, what an achievement that we actually did that year?
Yeah, I mean, I think we all got a copy of the DVD of the season and that. And when you watch it from beginning to end, and, you know, and the budget, I don't think there's been a budget that low that's ever got in the Premier League, and I don't think they'll ever be again, to be honest. But it was, you know, we were a very good, you know, we had a good set of players. We had a lot of lads who'd lost away and things like that. And Neil Nolloway came in and managed to, you know, put his style. He wanted to play a certain way. He came in on his first day and just said, I've been a manager for God knows how many years. I'm sick of 4-4-2. I want to play entertaining football. And if I get sacked again, I want to get sacked playing football that I'd like to go and watch. And I think, you know, we were that, you know, and he was on about his chickens and Keith Southern's nudging me and I'm looking at Matt Jilks and Jillo's like, what's going on here and stuff. And, you know, and we won a couple of pre-season games. But I think that signing Charlie was the big thing as well. I think that was our big signing because none of the lads thought we'd get him. He'd come the previous season, done really well for us, you know, played a massive part in Blackpool staying in the Championship. And he's that better class, you know, great left foot and that we needed, and probably I don't think anyone thought we'd get him. And the day I remember at where Fleetwood are training now, the rugby club at Fylde, we walked in. I remember him coming out of the thingy room and just in disbelief, and he signed, and it was turned out probably the most important signing Blackpool's ever done.
Yeah, and in terms of the squad that season, Ian Chisnell, there were a number of players that came in on loan, came and went again. Some names that when we mention them, people will forget all about. What about Marcel Siep? And people like him, Mr. de Montignac, people like him who came and went and really are probably not remembered that well at Blackpool, but it was a big team effort that year, wasn't it?
Yeah, and the quiz questions go that, you know, everybody in the world thinks that Charlie Adam was the captain that year. Well, he wasn't. Jason Ewell was the captain. He was the club captain, and he and Charlie together lifted that trophy at Wembley. But yeah, I mean, they came and went as they did the next season in the Premier League. I was looking through my files the other day, and Sergei Kornilenko, now how about him?
Blimey, utterly forgettable, wasn't he? Your old mate Beats came for a little while as well, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Beats, he'd had a fantastic career, Beats. It didn't really happen, I don't think, for him at Blackpool. But, you know, I play with him, I've known Beats since we were kids, and I've been at Blackburn. I did all my Blackburn years with Beats and Southampton and that, and he's unbelievable goal scorer. You know, he had such a good time at Southampton. And, you know, I think, like anything else, back time, every player has a club that's special to them. And, you know, mine is Blackpool. I think Beats, you know, say he's with Southampton because that's where everything just worked well for him and went for him. So, but it can happen at every club, unfortunately, not always, but, it, you know, it's just one of them things.
Ian, the contribution that Brett made to Blackpool in two spells. Are we likely to see that sort of contribution in modern day football that we've seen? And I'm saying modern day football. I'm trying to not make Brett seem like he's 79, not 39 here, but
look 79.
But you know, but you know what I mean. 250 games for a club in two spells, and to be ultra popular in both of them.
Ultra popular everywhere he's been, I think. Everywhere you go up and down the country, and you mention the name Brett Ormerod, he was always well liked because he always put that shift in to give you 110%. But in answer to your first question, no, I don't think we will see it because, you know, the way the game is going and the motivation behind people moving on or whatever is rather different than when Brett was playing his trade in either spell at Bloomfield Road. And I don't think we will see that sort of commitment and longitudinal service ever again.
What was it like under different Blackpool managers, Brett? I mean, you came in under Gary Megson, didn't you?
Yeah.
And didn't Gary have to get you out of your job in order to sign you?
Yeah, I played against Gainsborough for Aki Stanley on a Saturday, and we were playing in a cup game, and we had we'd drawn, it was a replay midweek, and Tony Greenwood was manager. I don't think I was in the team, and I'd scored two the previous game, so I was sort of scratching my head, and Tony just... I remember Tatman just saying, don't worry about it, I'll talk to you later. And then it was Eric Wall who pulled me after the game and said, look, we've agreed a fee with Blackpool, and do you want to go down tomorrow and we'll go and talk with him? So I said, yeah, fine, and because I had a day off anyway, my job, and we went down and stuff, and they basically just offered me a contract and put it in front of me, and I said, well, I'll have to tell my boss. And he's all right. I said, well, I've got to give 5 days' notice at least. So I got me Paul Ash, who's the godfather to me daughter as well. And I got Gary Megson ringing him, and it made his day, to be honest. I don't think he believed who it were at first. He thought it would go. I'd obviously warned him, pre-warned him that I'm going down to talk to Blackpool and stuff. And, you know, when Gary Megson, he thought I was winding him up. But no, it made his day, to be honest. He was... Yeah, he let me go.
and Nigel Worthington and Steve McMahon, I mean, people will have memories of them. I suppose affectionate ones in some ways, and in other ways frustration might come to mind. But Steve McMahon was someone who... He brought the headlines to Blackpool a little bit, didn't he? He was a well-known footballer. He played in World Cups for England. And he had an almighty temper about him when he wanted one, didn't he?
Oh yeah, he's like Gordon Strachan. When they argue, you never lost an argument, so there's no point doing it. You just put your head down and took it. But Steve McMahon was brilliant for me. When he first came to the club, I was obviously I had that double break of my leg at Wickham, and I was out for the remainder of that season anyway. So I think for and Blackpool, you know, with a Wick thing, I think. For both of us, for me, it was like a new club and a new start. And for him, it was, I suppose, it was like a fresh play because he hadn't seen me play. He did pull me early doors and say, no, you know, I've seen some of your goals and things like that. Don't worry about it. Just get yourself fit and you'll get your opportunity, which, you know, is all you can ask for a manager. And he did. And, you know, I managed to resume my partnership with John Murphy, and we went on a great run that season and managed to get promotion.
And I have to say, Ian, we said to Brett in the office when he came in, did you play in that game at Barnet? And he did.
Yeah, that's one to
what think. Game is that?
That one.
Yeah. That one with a good coach journey home back, I understand.
Yeah, the I can't remember the game, but I can remember after in the dressing room, that was ringing in my ears for a few days. Yeah, it was, I think, me, Danny Coy, John Hill. I just remember us all looking, no one dare look up. It was just one of them bad, bad days.
When you think of Steve McMahon's time, Ian Chisnell, it might not have ended the way he wanted it to, but did he start a bit of the success again coming to Blackpool?
Yeah, he did. I think he'll probably be the first to say that, you know, one or two of the players that had come to the club before that were instrumental in that success. But I think he was the one who brought in the mentality that he used to play with in either the blue shirt of Everton, the red shirt of Liverpool, the white of England or Villa. But he was a winner, and he just wanted to transmit that. And he didn't suffer fools gladly, knew what he wanted, and was quite prepared to speak about it in the interviews. He was a great man to have on the other side of the microphone. Bit like Ian Holloway in that you didn't know what you were going to get back, but he was always box office and good stuff, Steve McMahon. And yeah, I mean, those, it's a much maligned trophy, the Football League trophy, and whatever vision and sponsorship it has, But I don't know whether Brett will agree, but I think that played a big part in the rise of Blackpool taking them to the Premier League.
What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we had by the time I left, we had a fantastic team at Blackpool. You know, we have really good players like Richie Wellings and Danny Coy, John Hills, like I said, John Murphy, I played up for Paul Simpson. You know, we had so many good... We were one of them teams, I think, that on a day we could beat anyone. I think the only thing was probably the consistency. We used to concede probably too many goals at times, but, you know, if anyone caught us on a good day, you know, we could give them a beating no matter what league they were in.
Just before we let Ian go, just tell us a story about being sold by Blackpool to Southampton and who was profiting from it.
Eric, God bless him. The last game, I think, was Port Vale, and I remember Steve McMahon pulling me and saying, look, we've agreed a fee and things like that. So I think this was on the Thursday. He said, so I'm going to have to play you, but, you know, just be careful. Don't be diving into such stupid tackles and that. So I got a phone call off Eric.
Eric Worley, this
yeah,
is.
The Friday. And when I told him I was playing, he was absolutely in dismay. Because obviously Stanley had a sell-on clause and, you know, he wished me, you know, just make sure I look after myself. And I said, cheers, Eric. I'm very grateful that you're so concerned about my well-being. But, you know, I was more scared of getting injured to telling Eric that than anyone else. So, but it worked out really well. You know, like I said, when I was at Stanley, Eric Worley to me, he's Accrington Stanley. I went to his funeral. I still go out with his sons, Russ and Paul, quite a lot. And he's everything that was Accrington Stanley to me.
He looked after your moves, didn't he, Eric? I mean, he had to look after his football club, but he looked after your moves in terms that he wanted you to get as much as you possibly could out of football.
Yeah, when we went down to meet Gary Megson at Blackpool, you know, he told him I was on three times more than I were, and I was absolutely like a guppy fish. I mean, kicking me under the table, and I was like, I'm not on that. And he got me a small signing on fee that actually paid my car off as well, which, you know, I'll be forever grateful. He wasn't happy when I wanted fries with me at McDonald's when he bought me dinner, but, you know, he's... You know, I've so many fond memories of Eric, and, you know, I've seen him right up to... when he died, you know, I used to go cricket with his sons and things like that, and he'd always be there. And, you know, Eric were another one. He never suffered fools, and he was very knowledgeable, and he was very passionate about his sport.
Ian Chisnell, one final Brett Ormerod moment for you, apart from the playoff final. Anything else spring to mind straight away?
Well, I'll never ever forget this. He's the most mild-mannered guy you could ever meet, but he did shout at me on one occasion, and that was the horrible day at Wickham. The tackle, was it Steve Brown, Brett?
Yeah, I think it was.
Yeah, and I could hear it, even with the cans on in the commentary box. It was obviously a bad one just before half-time at Adams Park, and I handed back to the studio at half-time, raced downstairs. There you were in the corridor on the old stretcher, half in and half out with the pain and this, and he just looked up at me and he said, are you on that radio? I said, yeah. He said, get up there and tell me, Dad, I'm all right. I'll never, ever forget that, Brett, and... I believe Nigel Worthington stayed down with you, didn't he, until people could get there? But
yeah, he did. He was brilliant. It was Nigel Worthington, to be honest. To give me morphine, I remember the tackle. It snapped my shin pad as well as both bones in my leg. It was in trying to stand up on it. Initial shot wasn't the smartest thing to do, but yeah, it was brilliant. And it was it's probably the most painful thing I've ever had experience, to be honest.
So I didn't mind you shouting at me in those circumstances.
I honestly can't remember that. Cheers.
Congratulations on a great career.
Thank you very much. I'm very humbled. Cheers, I appreciate it.
Cheers,
Ian Chisnell joining us this evening on BBC Radio Lancashire. We're with Brett Ormerod between now and 7 o'clock. We'll get through some questions very shortly as well. Brett and Sally back tomorrow morning from 9:30. They'll be introducing the local girl band Creating a Stir in Rawtenstall. And more from a very active Barbara on Real Life Stories. And the snooker legend John Parrott will be live on the programme. So lots to talk about and lots of snooker tales to tell with Brett and Sally this Thursday morning at 9:30.
Andy Bayes
on BBC Radio Lancashire.
Reminder of the trivia question this evening. One or two getting it right already. Which three players who scored in the 1986 World Cup have also managed in the Premier League? We've got a Dane, a Scotsman and a Frenchman to get this evening. And congratulations to you if you've got it right already, which some of you have. Anthony, spot on. Well done to you. Gareth, you're right as well. And Claret Daddy, who's also Gareth, he's got it right as well. And loads of Blackpool fans getting in touch tonight. Nick says, for Brett to have an illustrious career, that he still had yet to be so down to earth shows he's a true Lancashire hero. Sorry, Nick, I read that awfully. But it shows exactly what we're trying to get across there. And another message that we got earlier, Brett, that refers to your time at Preston North End and refers to playing alongside David Nugent. Where does he rank in terms of your strike partners in your playing career?
He's definitely up there, he's Nuge. I mean, it was that time of my career when I was actually starting to be a lot older than the players I was playing with rather than younger. But, you know, Nuge, in fact, you know, he brought, when I came back up from Southampton, you know, I'd had 4 years down there, 3.5 had been absolutely brilliant. By the time I came to Preston, I'd not played under Harry Redknapp, so I was a bit disillusioned in that. And then to play with someone like David Nugent, who was full of energy, who reminded me a bit of myself, you know, just absolute, just no cares in the world. And, you know, he had all the skill in the way he could finish. He was a joy to play with, really, and he brought the best out of me. I really enjoyed playing up front with Nuge. And, you know, he's a likeable lad. He won't forgive me for saying he's, you know, he's probably a bit thicker than me, to be honest. But what a great lad, and I really enjoyed playing with Nuge. He, like I said, he really did. When I went back up there, he gave me a new lease of life, sort of thing, playing up front with someone like that, and I loved it.
Scored on your debut for Preston, didn't you? And you joined a team that was really on the up, a manager who had brought this team together that in reality, Brett, should have gone up.
You know, and absolutely, you know, it's one of them things. In the second leg, you know, we'd gone to Leeds. I remember going to Leeds. We'd drawn 1-1 there. We'd done the hard thing. And in the first 5 minutes of the game, you know, it was just, when we kicked off, it was just, you know, Leeds looked a bit, not frightened, but, you know, overall we were on top. We started really well. And then, obviously for me, it finished badly. I brought my leg again in 6 places, tore my ankle ligaments and things like that. And I just remember being at the hospital at Preston, which I'd spent a lot of time actually in my Preston days. I got to know the nurses by first name names. And, you know, I just remember a nurse coming in saying Leeds have scored. And then it seemed 2 minutes again and Leeds have scored again. And, you know, and then I got the news I broke it in 6 places. And it was just a bad day all round, to be honest.
When you look back at the characters in that dressing room, that there were some players. I think you were kind of, with the exception of David Nugent, you were all at your peak. The Graham Alexanders, Ayoub Mawenis, Claude Davis, Chris Lichetti, Callum was there, Paul McKenna, Brian O'Neill.
We had fantastic players, you know, and like you said, them names. Callum Davis was probably one of the most professional people I've ever worked with. You know, Paul McKenna's so underrated. He was absolutely, you know, I've played against Paul McKenna since we were 8 years old. You know, I've known him through the years and everything. He's such a fantastic player, you know, always had a pass on, always. And Graham Alexander, you know, Brian O'Neill, just, and they were all fantastic players, underrated in my opinion, especially in the Championship that year, because we always looked at teams like Watford and teams like that, and for me, Preston always got overlooked, and the calibre of players they had was, they were never given the recognition, I don't think, of how good them players were.
It's actually quite amazing. Yeah, I remember being at Deepdale, I think it was the end of last season in the playoffs, it could have been the playoffs the season before, but a lot of you were invited back to watch North End. I'm sure you were there. There was Graham, there was Brian O'Neill, there was Paul McKenna, there was a big long list of you that were there, and you got introduced to come onto the pitch at half-time.
Yeah, it was against Rotherham.
Yes, it was the playoffs, wasn't it, when Joe Garner scored that volley at the end of the season before last, when they lost in the playoffs. And looking at those lads, they still look like they could play. The majority of them, they've hardly aged.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they make a good five-a-side team. Like, I've obviously just finished at Bamber Bridge with Kenner, and, you know, Kenner can still pass a ball. He's still got a pass on, you know, and he's still a very, very clever player. And he's one of my great good friends as well. I still speak regularly with him. You know, we have been out for drinks once or twice with my missus and his missus. So, yeah, he's like I say, I always thought he's very, very underrated, and he was a fantastic servant. But, you know, Graham and Kenner and people like that, absolutely unbelievable servants for Preston North End.
What a character Claude Davis was, by the way.
Claude was, he loved to put his music on, and I remember going in once with Kenner, he had his music in and Kenner was pulling his face, so I went to the CD player and whizzed his CD across the room, and he looked at me like that and just I thought, I'm going to get knocked here, but he just started smiling. So I just threw it across the room and walked off. And, you know, the lads were, I think Brian O'Neill and that, were loving that.
Oh,
at the
yeah.
At
some,
the time.
some great times. And it must, when you look back on it, to know that you can walk on a pitch at Deepdale and Bloomfield Road, if you're, whenever you're invited back, and you'll get applauded by two sets of fans who have absolutely no love for each other whatsoever.
It's well, you mentioned the Rotherham game. I went back there as a player, and when Ben said, "Oh, you're going on the pitch," I went, "Are you joking me? Like, you know, I'm going to get killed here." And I went on and got an absolute, you know, resounding applause. And you know, I do feel myself very, very fortunate, and I've always said that. Anyone asks me, I'm very, very lucky, because I do know the, you know, I know more than most the history of Preston and Blackpool. And but to me, you know, they're both fantastic football clubs, you know, and I love my time at both clubs. And you know, Blackpool's obviously my club because of the two spells and all that, but you know, I enjoyed it at Preston, and I do consider myself very fortunate to be in that bracket. I don't think there's many who can play for both and still get on with the fans as well as they did, and you know, I do appreciate that.
Evening to Nicky Unwin. What was your favourite school and college you went to?
Well, I went to Western County in Great Hall as a primary school, Norden, then straight into Blackburn Rovers football. So I'd have to, there are only two really, and both, I liked them both.
A load of quick fire questions for you, Brett. Who's the best player you ever played with?
Do you know what? One of the best players I ever played with, obviously, but was Matt Letizia. You know, I remember in my first training session, I partnered Matt Letizia in training, and he was at back end of his career then, and you know, we were doing a shooting session, and we had to have two touches. The goalkeeping coach had pinged it from behind a goal, and you were in a box, and you had two touches and finish, and it went to Letizia's head, and he's back-heeled it back over his head and volleyed it in top corner. And I looked at him and thought, what am I doing here? And honestly, I rang my brother that night going, oh my God, what am I doing at this football club? Matt Letizia, he's like meant to be over ill, and he's just, and he was, you know, I was lucky enough to play in his testimonial when it was absolute oozu of, you know, Alan Bolt, the manager, Laurie McMenemy, Kevin Keegan, and then the players, it was every England player that I worshipped when in the 80s, Peter Beasley came up, hiya Brett, I was like, oh, my jaw dropped on the floor, you know, and it was Gascoigne, he was unbelievable. We got to watch his 10 favourite goals, and his favourite goal was the one at Blackburn at Ewood Park, which I was actually there.
Brilliant
when,
goal.
When, you know, Blackburn ended up and applauded, I was actually on duty as an apprentice then when he scored that goal. And but, you know, I'd swap all my goals for two of his. He was unbelievable. And he did it. I once went to a training session we had, and I was injured, and he'd been retired 3-4 years, and he came in, and Anthony Naomi was there. He was helping the keepers do a shooting session. I was in the gym looking out the window, and bearing in mind Anthony Naomi was considered, you know, as one of the best goalkeepers in the Prem, and they were doing a pretty similar drill where they were just knocking it, and you had to have two touch, and Tiz was just one touch, and he was just rolling it in the corner time and time and time again. You could see Anthony getting frustrated because he couldn't get anywhere near it, and the minute he tried to take a liberty and take one more step to his left to try and so he'd get there, he put it in the other corner, and I was just on the exercise bike just thinking, God, I couldn't do that, you know. He's just amazing. He's an amazing bloke as well, but like I said, I never got to put, well, the talent of that man was frightening.
Nick's been back in touch, and he says it's all right for me making a mess of reading his tweet out. He said, celebrated his goal at Wembley and lost his glasses. So you're a bit like Jurgen Klopp there, Nick, aren't you? From the weekend's result at Norwich. But I mean, those times at Southampton, playing in that level, and the goal from Matt Letizia you mentioned that was at Blackburn. I think Tim Flowers, the look on his face, because he knew him so well. They were good mates, weren't they?
Oh, yeah.
And he just looked over and he'd been chipped from about 50 yards out.
I remember, I think Tim Flowers just fell into the back of the net, to be honest. And, you know, it was a fantastic, you know, it just summed Matt Letizia up. He wasn't just a scorer of goals. He was, you know, a scorer of great goals. And when they came, they were usually unbelievable, you know, special. And he was, you know, such a phenomenon. He's such a nice bloke. You know, I still speak to him now and again on Twitter. And I used to go out with him, have a few drinks as well, right, which was absolutely surreal. Beaks ring me up and say, come on, we're going out. And then I end up with Matt Letizia, me and him, and Jumping Jacks, which was Tizzy's favourite place. And I was just sat there having a drink and still thinking, what am I doing here? You know, it's just frightening. But great times, to be honest.
The magician is here, Brett Ormerod, described by Ian Chisnell there at just approaching 7:08. That's got to be some accolade that you'll always remember. Every division of golf for Blackpool. Brilliant.
Yeah, it's like I say, it's just one of them things. I mean, when we got into the Premier League, I started the first few games, but it was pretty obvious. I was 33, coming on 34 then, so we'd bring in other players in. You know, we had Matty Phillips coming in and Tom Ince, and so my game time was getting less and less. And, you know, a lot of people kept asking me about this thing, are you going to score? And I'd scored a goal against Fulham, and it was just offside at home. I got given offside, and it was... You try not to let things play on your mind, but you're just thinking it's never going to happen. And then out of the blue, I think we played a reserve game, done well, and I was on the bench against Tottenham. And the gaffer said, get you going on, lad. And I remember, I think we were 2-0 up, but we were pretty much under the cosh at the time. Tottenham had a great team. And Matty Phillips ran inside with the ball, and I think it was Aquato, is it, the left-back, who he took it off him. And for some reason, I just thought, he's not going to clear this. He's going to take a touch and try and turn out. And so I gambled on him, and he did, and he just knocked it right in my path. So it was like, cheers, and I just hit it in and went under Gomez. And it was just the joy of just the relief and everything. And it's probably, you know, Bloomfield went mad, and it was fantastic. I was just, you know... It's hard to express into words. As you tell, I'm a man of few words, but it's brilliant.
One of the other brilliant things I remember about your playing career was just as I think it was in the playoffs when you went up, your dad became a sensation on the radio.
Yeah, me
coming
dad
on and talking, and he used to lock himself away, listen to the radio, didn't he? Yeah. Have his beer and have a smoke and all that. Yeah. He had his routine every day with the dog as well, wasn't it?
I'd like to see him do it now. Now I'm retired. He's no excuse now. He's, you know, my dad's, he's just very set in his ways. And, you know, that's how we felt comfortable and doing it and thingy. He came to the FA Cup final and we got beat. So that was it. Never again. I managed to get him there and he said, no, you got beat. So, you know, with a playoff final, he was never getting him there. And to be fair, I agreed with him. I thought, well, yeah, if he's that and we won. So, he was... he sounds more common than me on radio, to be fair, my dad. But no, he's been brilliant.
Oh, it was great entertainment to know that he was listening every game to the radio station to want to know how you got on, and he went through exactly the same routine game after game after game, and he was on his own at all these games, wasn't he?
He didn't want
any company.
Yeah, he's passed on to me. To be honest, if I ever play well in a game and I wore a certain shirt and tie, I always try and wear that same shirt and tie. And, you know, I once remember getting stuck in traffic and going to Bloomfield and I had to go a different way and I got man at match, so I went that way again and, you know, just stupid things. So I blame my dad, to be honest.
When you think back to that season in the Premier League with Blackpool, and it's very easy to say because we were sat in the stand enjoying every minute of it, is there a feeling that, had you just shut down one or two extra games, the points tally would have shown. Had you got a point in a couple of games that you'd have lost, you'd have stayed up. And you were the entertainers that year, and everyone loved you as a team. Is there a sense of regret, a big one, that you were good enough to stay up and it just didn't happen?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the points total in the season after and the before, and, you know, and we'd have survived comfortably, and, you know, I think we're still the highest scoring team ever to get relegated. And but, yeah, I mean, there is that. We probably changed a bit too late, but that's the way we were. We were just so gung-ho. And there were times where, you know, we could have took a point where, you know, but we wanted all three. And that may be a bit of naivety coming in from the Championship, from winning games and wanting to keep winning. That in the Premierships, it's a different model. And, you know, a point's a hell of a good point, you know, whether it's at home or away. And it can, you know, it can matter. And... I think we started to realise that, but I think it probably came a bit too late for us. And, you know, once you have to go to Old Trafford and beat them to stay up, it was never going to be easy.
Loads of people along the same lines wishing you well, Brett, the Blackpool supporters who just want to remember the good days. Stevie Lowe, who's with you every Sunday on Lancashire Outdoors, he says, one of my all-time Stanley legends. I even went to Southampton twice just to watch him play. Stevie Lowe went to watch you there. And I mean, you look back at your clubs in Lancashire. I mean, there were clubs elsewhere, of course, there were the Forest. You went to Leeds. I remember once didn't you play twice in the same weekend? You went on loan somewhere, didn't you?
Yeah, I think it's never been done anyway. I got recalled. I went to Leeds, and that's one place I'm probably not fondly because I missed a penalty on my debut in front of 40,000 Yorkshiremen, which didn't go down well, and I split my head open. But no, my last game for Leeds was at Brighton away, and I'd been recalled. And off, I think Steve Wigley was the manager then. I've been recalled back to, and I went and they were playing Birmingham and he sat me on the bench and I came on. And I think it's a quiz question. You know, I played for Leeds on the Saturday and ended up playing half an hour for Southampton on the Sunday. I was absolutely knackered.
I bet you were.
And I think we drew both games, to be honest. So.
Good going. A couple in here. Bill in Skipton, he says, best of luck, Brett. As a claret, I wasn't always on your side, but if you were on the pitch, I always knew you'd give 110% and there was every chance you'd score. A true Lancashire great. And another one here from Isabel says, love Brett, wish him well. He presented me with a match ball when he was man of the match against Cardiff in December 2000 when I was the match ball sponsor for my 21st. He was an absolute hero. We're talking over 15 years ago, and Isabel remembers it just like that. She would, with it being for her 21st, but I tell you what, it's lovely to see such lovely messages coming in tonight just to pay tribute to the career you've had, Brett. I suppose there's so much more I'd love to ask you, and I think we'll have to get you in again and do it. You know, we've only scratched the surface with Ian Holloway and what a guy that he was and some of your teammates, but what's next? Have you given it any thought now that the boots are not going on any longer? I know that there's your kids to consider and their sporting challenges.
I'm going to play in a seven-a-side team. I've spoke with this before with Barry Shuttleworth, who I used to play with at Blackpool and stuff. Baz lives near me. I've known Baz since we were kids, and we've played the same Sunday League team. And we've got a few ex-players who we used to play in the same Sunday League team. So we might join a little league like that, over 35s or something. So I've not been kicking a ball around. You know, if I get asked to play in the charity games and things, I'll try and make them as well. So I'm not exactly never going to play football again. I couldn't imagine that. When I probably can't walk again, I'll never kick a ball. But in terms of other things, I have a few things with my wife that we're looking into. We've got a Subway franchise that the lease has just fell through, so that's been 9 months wasted. But we're looking into that, and we've got a gym one as well. So we've plenty of things to be going on. I've got three kids who are, you know, two are playing football. My daughter swims 6 days a week at Accrington. So wow. It's not like I've not got nothing to do, to be honest.
And if social media is anything to go by, frying eggs maybe isn't the way forward, is it?
Yeah, my missus put that on. I can't believe she's actually. It's a year ago today. I tried frying an egg and made a night mess of it, and she's put. And I haven't tried since, which is true because I just nipped to Tesco's and get the breakfast or something like that.
Hey, if you're not good at it, what's the point? Very much my methodology when it comes to my wife.
I tried that with a cleaning up as well, but yeah. I ain't getting away with that.
We're out of time, Brett. Thank you so much for coming. Congratulations on a fantastic career. You'll be missed at all the clubs you've been at, but hopefully we'll hear more from Brett on the radio as the season progresses.
Loving sport in the Red Rose County.
BBC Radio Lancashire.